For comic's sake, this is Volume 1, Issue 0, Origin Stories.
For comic's sake on iTunes.
At For comic's sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For comic's sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Rated Max for explicit content. Not approved by the Comics Code Authority. And then you held out your hand towards mine and you said that you've hardly ever met anybody who reads comic books. And that happened all the way back in fall of 2015. I am Anthony.
I am Ryan.
And you are the other, you're the person who initiated this handshake.
Yes, absolutely I am. I'm all about shaking those hands, you know.
That is true.
You gotta do that.
For anyone listening, this is the very first episode, or issue, if you will.
There we go.
And people are confused because it's issue zero, so we're already doing a prequel to something we never recorded. The whole, the point of this, whether you listen to this at the time of the recording, the week of the recording, the month or the year, or maybe 5 years down the road, we're always going to keep this issue zero up as an origin stories or not so origin stories, where if you just jump into a random episode, you can always go back and kind of find out how we got into comics, why we got into comics, what are our favorite in comics, and it kind of, it's a good introduction that I think would be good for any podcast to always kind of have that there. It's going to Netflix and watching season one, if you will, and it just kind of, you always have that information there. So, before we actually jump into being comic book fans, we should mention what this podcast is going to be as we go forward. We want to talk about weekly issues.
Yes, we absolutely do. I think most of the show, we are going to be talking about our weekly pulls. And, you know, one of the reasons we started this podcast is because we can actually talk about spoilers with one another.
Exactly.
So that is something that definitely you are going to hear in the show. We are going to be talking about what is happening in these books, because sometimes when you are talking to comic book people, you really have to tiptoe around what's going on because you don't really want to ruin it for them. This is definitely, we are going to be talking about spoilers. So we'll just put that warning out there right now, but we're going to be talking about our weekly pulls and other things that we've been reading on a regular basis.
Exactly. And when I do another podcast called The AB Conversation with my co-host Brent Strasberg, we do a comic book segment on there. And I just pick a couple of my favorite books of the week. I talk about them in a non-spoiler fashion to help advertise. I think the majority of the listenership that we have isn't drawn in on the comic aspect. Some local people, some friends, and so I keep it all spoiler-free for the sake of comics. For comic's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
And to help advertise. But what I miss from doing that is the idea of actually being able to talk about that in a spoiler fashion.
You can only geek out about something so hard without actually being able to talk about what's happening.
Exactly. So this podcast is going to be structured with that. We will have that warning at the beginning of every issue that we release. Just to get any new listener, if you pick up on, you know, week 52 or something, and we're going to list our titles saying, I read so-and-so, you read so-and-so, we're going to be talking about these books. If you didn't read the books that we just announced and we advertised in the episode issue description, then that's your warning being like, all right, maybe I should read those. Or maybe, let's say, you haven't read issue 27 of Detective Comics, and and then you realize, hey, maybe I'm going to listen to them spoil this and say, hey, that's something really good. Maybe I'll pick up that issue and pick up the next issue. So hopefully with talking spoilers, it can also advertise something of sell you something that maybe you're not reading.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be too often we're going to completely bash a book into the ground. For the most part, you know, we're pretty respectful of creators and writers and artists. And you know, if we really don't like something, there's a good chance that we're not going to talk about it. We might mention it, but the idea is to get, you know, you guys, the listener, excited and maybe read these books along with us.
Exactly.
Something else that we've been kind of tossing around a little bit is we're going to be talking about, we're going to have a spotlight segment.
Yes, kind of a comic book club of the month, if you will.
Sure. So
Jelly of the Month Club.
Well, there we go. Do those even exist anymore?
Only in Christmas vacation.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So we might be, you know, Anthony and I will probably be reading the same book, and maybe we have five issues that we can talk about. And that, again, will be all spoilers. But if we do that spotlight, we are doing it with the idea that we are really enjoying that book, and we want you to read it too.
Exactly. And we plan on doing that a month out so everyone knows, and you can have time to prepare and buy the issues digitally, buy the upcoming trade, and, you know.
They're going
to
have homework.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what it is. It's homework.
Exactly. And we all come in.
It'll be fun, though.
And hopefully through our Twitter and our email and all that kind of stuff, hopefully we can kind of build a community of people chiming in, and we can read things on air and all that kind of stuff, and kind of create a good, positive comic book reading community. And like you said, especially not concentrate on any hate of just...
Oh, exactly.
Some of it may just come out naturally just for the aggression of a character plot point if we're passionate on something.
Sure.
But not in the sense of saying, like, this absolutely sucked and I, you know, hope...
Yeah, we're not going to try to get anybody fired from their job. That's not the idea behind the podcast. We're here to have fun.
No threats on the creators. No. Any frustration, I think, just comes out... Sure. For the love of...
What about the pencilers? Can we threaten the pencilers?
Pencilers, yeah, they're done.
Okay, all right.
Pencil
neck that's
geeks.
What I thought.
Those pencil neck geeks are just done. No, but yeah, so that's a good thing to always say that, yeah, we'll be doing our weeklies, we'll be doing a spotlight. You had a good idea about trading.
Yes, we thought it would be fun to talk about our trade paperbacks that we're reading. We've got a couple names that we are kicking around a little bit. I like trading with Anthony and Ryan. Mm-hmm. Between the two of us, we have a ridiculous amount of trade paperbacks, and I'm always, you know, opening them one up and reading them weekly, and we would love to feature an entire trade paperback, and we think that'd be a lot of fun too.
And we were thinking about calling it Trading Places, but I think TLC sent
we already got sued. Yeah, we already got sued before what comes before the Zero episode? I don't even know.
It's
like before this even. So.
-0.5.
Exactly.
Point now. So yeah, that is kind of just an overall kind of explanation on what we plan on doing here on the podcast, and just for the sake of comics, for the love of comics, just talking about comics and spending the time on the things that excites us about the business and about the medium. The show will evolve as we go on. We plan on doing it weekly is to keep up with our weekly releases as far as schedules work out, and that is kind of the goal. But we cannot create a comic book podcast without talking about how we got into comic books.
Sounds like we almost have an origin story coming up here.
Now, I was born in the year 1983. Were you born in that year, too?
I certainly was. Best year ever.
It is. So, that's great, because now we're both on the same page.
Yeah.
But then that's where it starts to differ. I mean,
birth big time.
Year.
Big time.
Birth
that's
year
about
good.
It, then.
And I always like to say that just memory-wise and like being able to concept being a fan of something and being able to react to it. And age 5 is always like a good, like... Start, you know, 4 or 5-ish is kind of probably when you start, you know, understanding things and just, you know, you got a mind of your own. And
I'm impressed that you know what was going on at the age of 5.
Exactly. But going into 1987, 1988 or so, my introduction to comics started with superhero toys. My brother Adam had a good friend named Steve, and Steve would give me hand-me-down toys from the Batman 1966 television show with Adam West and Burt Ward. And the action figures basically got me introduced to your Batman and your Robin and your Joker and your Penguin and your Riddler. Some of those toys, which I still have today, some things got sacrificed to rummage sales in order to fund the next fandom going on. But
Steve would be upset with that.
Maybe he would. Hopefully he's not listening to
right now. Yeah.
And what's funny with Steve is that it actually was... I did bring a Robin figure here today. So,
oh, wow.
An old school Batman 66 Robin figure. So I would get those toys. I started to find out like who the heck these characters are, basically. And what was funny is that I would always ask for Superman. I heard about this character named Superman. He said he had a Superman toy, but he could never find him. he had given me a Lex Luthor toy, and but Superman, he's like, oh, I haven't found Superman yet. Every time he would come over, and I would say exactly that. I'm like, you find Superman yet? He's like, no. And he'd kind of like laugh just because, like, you know, damn it, I can't find Superman for him. I shouldn't have told him that, you know, I was going to give him this guy named Superman. And that joke carries on for the next 25 years. I don't see him that often. I saw him, I think, maybe last year. So maybe it's like once a year.
Sure.
Maybe even more gaps in between there. And here I am as a nearly 33-year-old grown-up, and I saw him, I think, last year for my brother's birthday party. And I shake his hand, and I'm like, hey, Steve. He's like, hey, Anthony. I just go, find Superman yet? And he's like, oh, no, can't find him. I'm still looking, though. And it's funny that that joke has continued on, and I never got that Superman toy from
him. The saddest part of all the story, though, is that you never got the toy.
Exactly.
I don't know how I feel about Steve anymore. I'm not going to lie.
I don't even know what Superman looks like just because of that. Yeah, so right. I've avoided all Superman because I wanted to
start
with the
toys. You don't want spoilers. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Since my introduction was through the toys, I wanted to, you know, naturally progress that way with every single character. But yeah, so that kind of introduced me to the reruns of the Batman 66 show. Are you familiar with that? Were you a watcher of that?
Absolutely. I think that's one of those shows that, you know, you ask your parents if they watch that show, and they're going to say yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt about it.
They put it on the TV.
I know, and you watch it now. It's so goofy, but I'll tell you what, pound for pound, it's a pretty entertaining show. It's pretty hard to turn off.
Yeah.
If you're flipping through the TV and it's on, you got to watch it.
Once they had settled all the distribution rights, because it was one of the last like series along with like the Wonder Years that wasn't put on a DVD or a Blu-ray for the longest time, but it was held up.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was held up for so many years with just rights from all the different studios on who owns this and who whatever. And last year is when the Blu-ray set came out, and it was all three seasons, and you know it's like 150 plus episodes or something like that. And I bought that several $100 set with so much stuff, with trading cards and Matchbox car and digital copies of all of it and booklets, and just there's so many bonus materials and stuff like that. So yeah, that Batman 66 show. There's a good chance that anyone that's our age, or within the maybe 10 years older than us, I think a lot of people's origins always go back to that Batman 66 show. For all the different podcasts I listen to, everyone seems to have that very same story.
You know, it's funny to think how young I was when I first saw that. I mean, you're talking 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And even then, I was like, this show is so old.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it felt, and at that point,
crazy.
It was already 20 years old at that point.
It's just
give
crazy
or take.
To think about.
And now, you know, now, from 66 to 2016, the fact that, you know, something is still praised and treasured. And so all my roots for superheroes come from a lot of DC properties, from the action figures based on the television show that I lived through in the reruns. When it comes to actual comic books, a lot of it came through rummage sales, and I would assume off of, you know, the classic term would be the spinner racks. Kids today would be like, what the hell is a spinner rack?
And we barely know what the spinner rack is.
Yeah.
And that was phased out by the time 1990 hit, I think.
Yeah, and the spinner racks, Kennelly, which is now known as the Aurora, or was the Aurora Pharmacy, or Kewaskum Pharmacy here in Wisconsin. But Kennelly was the name of, like, hey, we're going to Kennelly. Yep, we're going to Kennelly. I don't have the origin stories on Kennelly. That's a whole other podcast, I think. But a lot of my comic books, I think, came from there. And a lot of things, prior to a lot of superhero stuff, Bugs Bunny, Roadrunner and Coyote, Casper the Friendly Ghost, Beetle Bailey, Archie, and then Howard the Duck, which I never associated with Marvel at all. Mm-hmm. It was always just, here's a talking duck, you know. RoboCop, Sonic the Hedgehog, Ren and Stimpy, and, a shit ton of Richie Rich. Those are batches of comics that I still own today that survived all of the years of fandoms.
You know, I have not heard some of those, the names of those TV shows in a long time.
Uh-huh.
I'm tempted to grab my iPad and go on Amazon and buy Ren and Stimpy right now.
Yeah, I've got a lot of DVDs.
I just haven't watched that show in forever, and I used to watch that all the time. And my dad watched it with me.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, man.
And they even had comic books for it, and Dan Slott wrote Ren and Stimpy. I had him sign a Ren and Stimpy issue.
That is impressive. Last year. That actually makes me want to go out and read Ren and Stimpy.
So, yeah, so a lot of my comic book origins come through all of, like you said, with the television properties of those popular cartoons and franchises and stuff like that. And then came a very interesting book, I would say is probably the most grown-up book. Howard the Duck probably had maybe the most grown-up issues, themes, and stuff like that, I should say. But one book in particular I actually have right here, so I can page through it. A series called Scorched Earth. Now, I'm going to look. I want to say it was like 91, 92.
You guys can't, you know, see my reaction here, but I squinted and I'm looking at this book because I have never seen this in my life. No idea what this is.
August 1991. So I am, what, 8 at that point? I am in first grade. And I have this comic book called Scorched Earth. On the back it says, a fleshless serpent, an ancient whale, lost within the hollows of time, heard the leaning of nature's scale, and waited patiently for mankind. Now, does that sound like first grade reader
sounds
reading
deep.
Material?
Sounds yeah. deep to me.
Well, it is so dark and deep, and definitely not meant for a first grader, because somehow I got a hold of this. I don't know how I
did. I'm sure you did the right thing, put it down, didn't read it.
Well, I wanted to protect myself from reading comic books and my mom not finding this comic book and realizing, like, this stuff is the work of the devil, or, you know, even though my mom's yeah. not that kind of person.
Sure.
But when I'm reading Bugs Bunny and Beetle Bailey and Richie Rich and stuff, to come up with a comic book like this, the reason I bring this up because to protect my love of comic books at that young age, I ripped out a page of this book. Which isn't in here. I want to go on eBay. I looked and I could buy this is issue 3 of 6. This is the only issue I had of that 6-issue series. I saw on eBay for maybe 15, 20 bucks I can get those 6 issues. And I'm kind of going to it now, but there's just some weird like swamp pond, you know, steamy looking scene. And there's a shirtless guy mm-hmm. going in there and there's a chick. Well, there's a missing page in here because there was some nudity in there. Some female nudity. So the first grader who somehow got a hold of this comic book, I'm sure I found it in the woods somewhere, because mm-hmm. isn't that where you find like Playboys
yeah,
and
for
stuff
sure.
like that?
Ditch and, porn.
Yeah, yeah. So I found, you know, Ditch Comics basically. Yeah. And I remember 100% remember ripping that page out, hiding that page. I didn't destroy that page.
Well, I hope not.
I hid it somewhere, but I just made sure it wasn't in this comic book.
You have so to keep that page for a later date.
Yeah, exactly. Second grade.
Yeah, right.
But the thinking back on it makes me think like I must have done that for the protection of my comic books in general, just because if that would be like, oh, okay, maybe these comic books aren't for you, and that's why this issue is something very special, just because of that story, which kind of just shows my passion for it at the time. So yeah, Scorched Earth definitely holds a special piece in my heart. I didn't care about numbering. As you can see, this is issue 3 of 6.
Yeah.
That didn't stop me from reading that comic over and over again. Which, going to all my old comic books, I have another one from, I think this one's from 1992, Detective Comics issue 643. And because I had the Batman 66 love, here is Batman in Detective Comics, I think, is probably one of the first times I start reading proper superhero comic
sure.
books. All DC at this time. Years until I find out what Marvel actually is. And I didn't really care about numbering. I would just keep rereading the same stuff over and over again. And looking at my old collection, I didn't have 644 or 645. I think I had 646 and 647. Like, that didn't matter. I would just keep consuming the material.
Sure.
I don't think I was really grasping the actual content. I was probably very enthused by the pictures and stuff like that. And just kind of, you know, in a way, maybe just made up my own story as I'm reading along. But that kind of explains, like, my collection as a young child in first grade at that point. It's basically just getting my hands on whatever was there. And so, yeah, Detective Comics was probably a big staple thanks to those action figures from Steve back in the day. Hopefully we can have Steve on the podcast sometime. That'd be great. So.
Maybe he can bring you his Superman toy.
Yeah. Don't get my hopes up.
Yeah,
I've had my hopes
right?
up all this time, and now you just got me. Going back into my collection, I did have one issue of the 1990s Guardians of the Galaxy series. I'm going to touch base on why that issue became more popular to me way like 15 years down the road.
Yeah.
But going back to my old collection, it was cool to actually see that I had a Guardians of the Galaxy comic. How I had that comic, whether I got it randomly for a nickel at a garage sale or just bought it actually from that.
You found it in the ditch.
Yeah, that was another ditch comic. Yeah. Lots of nudity in the early Guardians comics. But I think it was just one of those impulse buys where I'm just, you know, I shopped a lot with my mom. And, you know, whether I get a candy bar or like, oh, here's a comic book. And, you know, maybe she's the one that handed over Scorched Earth off the...
Sure.
I mean, even the title and the cover, you know, maybe, you know, she just wasn't looking. She's like, this is where the comic books are. Here, yeah. Take a comic book, shut up.
Get out of here. Get out of here, kid.
The Ninja Turtles movie, which I didn't put the year down, but I think that was like 89, 90 for the very first...
It's got to be pretty close to that, yeah.
For the very first live-action movie. Now, did you grow up with that?
I certainly did. In fact, I saw all three of the Ninja Turtle movies with the same people. So it was kind of like it was something
same,
that we... Yeah.
Same friend group.
Yeah, it was. It was actually, it was some family friends that my parents had, and we saw it with... their kids.
Okay.
So it was just, we did it we did it three times in a row and in the span of like 8 years, because I know that the third one didn't come out for I don't know how many years after the first two.
Yeah, the first two were like almost back to back, but I want to say that next one, I don't know if that was, 93 sounds early, but 95 maybe?
That's what I was thinking. I'm thinking 95, 96.
But yeah, the Ninja Turtles who, at that point, just cause you know, the cartoon, obviously.
I mean, if you want to talk about an obsession when you're younger, Ninja Turtles right there.
And with that, I never knew they were comic book characters. They were cartoon characters for me, because I'm like, that's how I found out about it, as well as toys and stuff, too. So going into that movie, it'd be a long time before I even learned that they were comic books. And even to today, I haven't read many Ninja Turtle comic books from the classic era.
Yeah.
And that's always been something that's on my long list of, like, just getting those old school
blocks. The long list gets longer and longer, and,
exactly. But the Ninja Turtles movie, to keep it comic books related. And then in 1992, Batman Returns movie. Now, I did skip over Batman 89 with Michael Keaton, so, you know, that happened. Enjoyed it, you know, live-action Batman, way different than the Batman 66 one. But I want to mention Batman Returns in 1992 because that still today is my favorite live-action Batman material ever. Dark Knight's awesome, and you know I got good faith with Affleck and his upcoming Batman and stuff like that. But something about Batman Returns was a good balance between the serious stuff and the kooky stuff. So Batman 89 was very serious. The Batman Forever, which was like 96, 97... That's when it was like, it got very cartoony.
Yeah, it was overly goofy.
Batman Returns, I think, it's because it became between them, was a perfect balance of those where you had some very dark stuff in there, but then you just had some really off the wall, like, you know, like even having all the clown stuff in there and everything, even though it was presented in a more horror element, but there was a lot of stuff with, you know, having live penguins, having torpedoes strapped to their back and stuff. Kevin Smith says this about the movie, and I agree with it. There's a scene that where Michael Keaton, Bruce Wayne, Batman, whatever you want to call him, almost realizes that he can't believe it's happening in the movie. When he's in the bat torpedo for the submarine torpedo, and he's going through the sewers, it's towards the end of the movie, and there are penguins after him that shoot torpedoes, and he's able to dodge it. There's a split second of him where he kind of like looks to the side or like looks in the mirror, just kind of like... He can barely turn his neck, but he looks to the side and he looks back at his front view, and you could tell that he's just like, did I just see a penguin shoot a torpedo at me?
So that wasn't a documentary.
No, definitely not. That's where I think it kind of like, that's what I love it so much, is because it is that it captures that seriousness and it starts to bleed into some of the, without being full on cartoony. But still today, Batman Returns, I don't care what comes out, but that's always going to be my thing. Like, I can remember being in the living room when my mom came home with that copy from Shopko when that came out on VHS. Me and my buddy Noah were sitting there knowing that Batman Returns, which I hadn't seen in the theater, and it showed up, and I can just remember the mood, the lighting of everything in that living room because of that movie, and that's just going to be a piece of nostalgia that sticks with me. So DC Comics very much is... the height of my introduction into all this stuff. And talking about being a big fan of Batman, 1993 in third grade, a new kid moves into class, moves into Kewaskum, Wisconsin. That kid's name is Brian Kraft. Now, whenever you have the new kid, and I'm sure it's a lot easier when you're all younger and stuff, that easy to become friends and stuff like that. The new kid shows up and happens to have the same Batman lunchbox as I do. So out of all the 30 kids in the sure. class, in third grade at that point, why not become best friends with the kid that has the same Batman lunchbox?
Why wouldn't you?
Either
obviously.
Either we each individually pick that out, or our moms are super cool for just picking that out. And, you know, our moms did become good friends too,
there you
obviously.
Go.
And so I met Brian because we both like Batman. When I remember going over to his house and getting ready to play, you know, toys, and got my action figures. He has his action figures. And then I see a bunch of characters that I've never seen before. I basically start asking him, like, well, who's this guy, and who's this girl, and what's this character, and who's that character? Like, I don't know these characters from Batman or Superman or anything like that. And he goes, well, these are the X-Men. And I'm like, who are the X-Men? I'm like, I don't remember, you know, them fighting Batman or anything like that. It's like, oh, no, these are from Marvel Comics. And I can only assume, I'm just like, you know, what are Marvel Comics? Because up until that point, with the exception of Howard the Duck, which I said I didn't know was Marvel property, I didn't have any exposure, because there was no, you know, I don't know when that Spider-Man cartoon was, but there was some bad, like, live-action Captain America, and there was definitely the Hulk series and stuff like that. But when I grew up with Batman 66 and having those action figures, Steve never gave me any Marvel action figures, and I never questioned, you know, never knew that existed. So 1993, he has a bunch of X-Men, and then there's the X-Men 90s cartoon, which you said prior to the recording you've never seen?
No, I have not.
And it's some damn good stuff, and after rewatching it recently, I honestly think that if you like the Turtles 90s cartoon, you would very much, I think you could appreciate this one, because it has the same, like, I would bet that a lot of the same animators and
sure.
the composers and stuff probably worked on it, because you watch it and they have the same kind of cutscenes and interludes and stuff like that. So he started showing me the X-Men cartoon, which he had all taped on VHS. And here I am, and he had X-Men comics and all that stuff. And from 1993, it was just Marvel, Marvel, Marvel. I was just, oh my God. And then Spider-Man started,
sure.
you know, because I'm like, oh, Spider-Man and Captain America and the Incredible Hulk and all these characters that I didn't care about prior are now introduced to me thanks to that X-Men cartoon and Brian and all that stuff. But if it wasn't for Batman, you know, Batman led me to Marvel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Batman is one of the first, you know, him and Superman are like some of the first superhero characters ever created in comics 75 years ago. So it makes sense that anyone could say that, like, you can't get to Marvel until you've had Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in your life, basically. So that's probably a pretty good staple for anybody. Then, because of the cartoons and those movies all coming out, I think there was a comics hiatus from that kind of started around 1997, give or take. So we've had, like, you know, three Batman movies come out. I started getting into pro wrestling again. I was kind of into it as a kid and stuff. It'd be on the TV and all that, whatever. But 1997 is a big year, because that is the year from episode one I started watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now, Buffy the Vampire Slayer currently lives on in comics, and this podcast is going to be about comics as we go on. But in order to get me back into comics, Buffy the Vampire Slayer had to be created by a guy named Joss Whedon. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer is happening. That's on the brink of going into high school in 1998, 1999. Have you watched any Buffy?
You know, here and there, nothing too major. That's going to be one of those shows that I just decided to tackle over a summer, because I know and Angel, I know there's like 55 seasons and 1,000 episodes or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so
those are the exact numbers.
Yeah, I might have to do that in 2 weeks instead of the 1 week binge watching.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And I wish I could go back to that day and rewatch
it for the first time. Sure.
Yeah. So 1997, Joss Whedon, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, high school, pro wrestling. Basically, I didn't have time to read comic books. Mm-hmm. I still, like, had some comic books. I definitely watched all the cartoons and TV shows. Batman the Animated Series, I forgot to mention that. That was, like, 1994. Have you watched any of that?
I don't
That's where Harley Quinn first appeared. That's where her creation came from.
I know that, but I don't know if I've actually ever seen it.
And not just because I was a kid and that's what I grew up in, but like looking back at it, like Batman, the animated series, and the X-Men animated series are probably two of the best things ever created, and they all still hold up today, and it's just, those are so, so good. So while they had a lot of live action content going on, I basically just didn't care about reading, and like, you know, you go into high school and you start, you know, you're meeting new people and new things, and wrestling really did take over my life.
Well, and the school's making you read stuff that you don't want to. So, like, the last thing you want to do is read more.
Yeah, that's a great example of just, you know, just wanting to be like, all right, I just want to sit in front of a TV.
Yeah.
When there's so much good TV, and that's very much important today, too.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's very easy not to, you know, to do other things. Laundry, mow the lawn.
Shower.
Brush your teeth.
Yeah, who does any of that?
All of those things I threw aside in high school. But yeah, so that was a big thing. Batman films were getting bad, but honestly, they were still just as freaking awesome when they came out. Batman and Robin, we look at it now, you know, it's not really that entertaining to watch. But then I remember going to the theater and just being
I'm sure the hype was real when you went.
Yeah, and I'm like, these movies are freaking amazing. And I almost went into my Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
yeah, so I absolutely love that stuff. And you look back at it now, it seems trashy, but it's just like, you know what? That was the best thing that was happening.
You know, we're going to be definitely talking about comics. This is a comic podcast, but I actually have a funny story.
Yes.
About the Batman and Robin movie.
Yes.
So, I think I would have had to have been in high school. So, we're going to just say either, well, I could have been eighth grade or either a freshman in high school.
All right.
And my friend Jay and I were going to be seeing it after school.
All right.
So, he decided to help me on my paper out so we could get done faster.
Awesome.
Well, what had happened?
Those are the good old days.
Exactly. So I got home from my paperwork and I found myself locked out of our house.
All right.
So the right thing to do would probably make a couple phone calls, call my parents at work. Well, we got the brilliant idea to find this big log to bust down the garage, the garage service door to get a ladder to climb up to my room.
Were you reading Scorched Earth?
Like, yeah, I know, like, I know.
That's something I would never
do. So, we could not get the garage door open.
All right.
Okay? So, we decided to go into the basement window.
All right.
Well, my friend Jay was gingerly lifting the window. It broke.
All right.
Okay. So, we have this broken window on the side of our house to get into the basement. So, we get in. I forget exactly what we just kind of hung out there for a little bit. And then we decided to go to the movie, and I don't remember offhand how we got there. I want to say maybe his mom drove us.
All right.
Well, so keep in mind, we went to this movie. My dad gets home from work. All he sees is this broken basement window and the log that's sitting next to it. So when he got home, he grabbed a flashlight and a crowbar and went into the business or into the basement because he had thought someone actually broke in.
So he was ready. He was defending himself, ready to kick some ass.
And like, it was legit.
Open up a
like, he was going to call 911. He was going to, I mean, it was like the real deal.
And going back to Ren and Stimpy, what we all know about logs is that it's log, it's big, it's heavy, it's wood. It's better than bad, it's good, but not in this case.
No, not really. No, because by the time I got home, I think that was the only time I actually got quote unquote grounded. And even at the time, like, when Jay and I, we reminisce about this, at the time we're like, we didn't do anything wrong, and we just forgot, we accidentally broke the window, and we just forgot to move the log, and, oh, we forgot to leave a note about the broken window. And now I look back at it, being 32 years old, and I'm like, what the fuck were we thinking? Breaking down a garage door to climb up to my bedroom window? Like, what? That's like the worst idea ever. That's the power of these superhero movies when you're that age.
You know, maybe there was a very limited time window rather than being able to download it or catch the next half-hour screening, like as many times as you can catch a screening now. And yeah, so it was obviously important.
If I can get my dad to listen to at least this origin story, he will not be laughing during that part because I'm convinced he is still pissed off to this day.
And hey, more power to him, I guess.
I know, right?
If he ever comes on the podcast as a guest, let's just make sure there's not a log in between us.
Yeah, no doubt, right?
During that time, too, Spawn had a movie. Spawn, talking about grown-up comic books, Brian also, I think he had the Spawn comics and the action figure, and there was definitely that movie that I remember seeing. There's a good chance we saw it together. But, yeah, it was one of those things that, you know, starting to introduce to these more, you know, serious things rather than going back to my old Beetle Baileys and all that kind of stuff, you know. And so we're kind of going into the year 2000, as they would say on the old Conan show.
Oh,
you
know, I missed that.
2000. Yep. Going into the year 2000 is when a lot of things started to change for the comic book movie, for this whole comic book superhero genre. The X-Men movie came out. I remember exactly seeing the X-Men movie on opening night because I'm just like, the X-Men, I'm like,
is this really happening?
Yeah, I'm like, looking at it, just being like, well, they're not all wearing their colorful suits, but I'm like, they look badass. This looks grown up, you know, 2000, you know, I'm like a sophomore right now, and it's just like, this is like super grown up, because yeah, they're all wearing black leather suits, and you know, opens up and then like the Nazi camp and stuff like that. Like, it's got some very adult issues for something that I grew up that was just fun and bright and colorful in the cartoons and the comics. And yeah, so I remember seeing that, and that's one that did a lot for all of like what we're watching today. The fact that we're still watching movies that are a sequel to that very movie. Now, were you on the ground floor of watching that as well?
I absolutely saw that. I don't think I saw it opening day. I probably was not as excited as you, but I remember thinking, leaving that movie, being extremely intrigued.
Yeah.
Like, where do these characters come from? Where did they start? How long have they been around?
It's just a small fraction of what, you know, even including all the movies we've seen for X-Men, still a small fraction of what the X-Men are, just because, you know, Wolverine's in all these movies. And
the listeners haven't heard my origin story yet, and I have not read comics. This is, we're at 2000 now.
Yeah.
And I have not read a single comic book yet.
And that's interesting.
Yeah.
And we're probably getting very close. We're getting there.
We're getting there.
Because at this point, if you remember, I was on my comics hiatus since 97. So 3 years into my hiatus, where now this X-Men movie happens, does that get me to, like, pick up any current X-Men or anything like that? No. Still into wrestling hardcore. Mm-hmm. We had our own backyard wrestling RCW group. And, you know, now, you know, got a job and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, wrestling is serious business.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
And that takes up so much of your time. So still,
writing those scripts. I mean, come on.
It's so much easier to sit down and watch a two-hour superhero movie than to go and pick up comics and just dedicate yourself to that.
I agree.
And so at that point, even though that movie happened, I still wasn't, that didn't do it for me to make me pick up more books. I still had all my old books, so that's cool. Jumping in 2002, a Spider-Man movie. Now that changed things even more. So once again, now I'm just kicking, you know, I'm starting to throw this DC stuff aside because the Batman movies are done for at this time. These Marvel movies are really, like, starting to, you know, take form. Marvel character movies, I should say. And that was another thing, being like, oh my god, that changed everything.
I think you can say that movie changed the entire industry.
It definitely did.
I mean, it just seems, when I go back to and look and think of some of these movies, to me, for me anyway, that is a turning point.
Yeah.
Because ever since then,
people still praise that one, just being like, you know, and they talk about Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people still say, they'll put it up with the Avengers movie and stuff, say like, well, that's easily my favorite comic book movie. And
really?
Good. Like, a lot of these creators, you know, are still dropping that Spider-Man 2 movie, which
I love it. I love it.
So I'm getting chills just thinking about it, knowing that, you know, we just have to talk about them. We can't watch them right now. 2003, X-Men 2 happens. And I would honestly say, just like with the Spider-Man movies, it's just like, just another, just hit it right out of the park. And now that you have all these characters introduced and just opening up the world of all this, but still not getting me to pick up these comic books. You know, me now would just be like, you idiot, go back and read comics because, you know, these movies are great, you know. Retroactively, I'd go back and do that, and which I had been going, where, you know, it's an ongoing mission to always go back and just read the classic stuff that you missed. Now, That was 2003. 2004 is when stuff gets real. 2003 is when Buffy ended. At this point, Buffy ended. Angel had one more year in it, and Firefly was canceled.
I didn't think Buffy was has been gone for that long. I mean, yeah. I never watched it, but I didn't realize how far back that goes.
Yeah, 97 to 2003. Okay. It was the 6 years with seven seasons. And so my love for Joss is still obviously growing here. Mm-hmm. My love for Joss with Buffy and all that stuff, I was the only one who watched Buffy out of my friend group. Not that I never shared it with anybody, not because I was ever embarrassed. It was just because it was my own thing.
Sure.
Which was mainly with comics, with the exception of Brian. And then there's another friend of mine, Ben Shoops, back in the day, who was a big X-Men fan. And we all kind of connected on that circle there. So me, Ben, and Brian all had basically like the big comic book X-Men love and stuff. And I keep saying X-Men because Joss Whedon, in 2004, I see an announcement on WhedonS.com, which is a fan blog that he contributes to. It's not his official website, but it's the best fan site for everything Joss Whedon related, and I still get updates today on everything Joss Whedon and people who've worked with Joss Whedon, somebody who guest starred in an episode or something. I find it all out through WhedonS.com, and today's sponsor, WhedonS.com. So what happened is that I see the announcement, Joss Whedon to come to Wizard World Chicago. And I'm like, Joss Whedon, Chicago? I'm like, I'm graduated high school at this point. I'm just like, got my own car, and I'm just like, got my own life and my own funds and bank account. I can make this happen.
So you almost instantly made up your mind.
It was within a split second. And now towards the end of Buffy, I was starting to get Brent, who I met in high school, Erica, who I met in high school, and I was, once the DVDs started coming out, I started to share that with a lot of people, because DVDs were all the big thing, you know, and a lot better than a VHS, and so easy to, because nobody bought seasons of shows on VHS, that just wasn't, you know, they existed out there, but nobody ever, DVD is when that thing, and Buffy was one of the earlier sets where, you know, you'd open it up and a six DVD set and so much material and all that stuff. So I started sharing Buffy with people towards the end of it. Got a lot of people into Buffy, and Brent being one of those that I'm like, oh, he would probably want to go to this thing. And like, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, Joss Whedon is at this Wizard World thing. In my head, I'm like, I don't know what Wizard World is, like Harry Potter like convention. I'm like, why is Joss Whedon in a Harry Potter convention? Not eventually, I would realize that it was from Wizard Magazine. And then I would remember having Wizard Magazine back in the day as well, and just being like, oh, that's what Wizard is, you know, the publishing magazine, they have a convention. But Joss Whedon was brought there, and I was still questioning, like, why, like, oh, well, you know, Buffy, and at that point, he's starting to film Serenity, the film sequel to Firefly, and so that's my entry point into a comic book convention. But as I was going into it, I was just like, well, Joss Whedon's there. Amber Benson from Buffy is there. I'm like, this ain't a comic book convention for me. This is a Joss Whedon Buffy con for me. And I remember going. He was there because he was the guest of honor. Back in those days, the Wizard Cons would have guest of honors. And he was brought on because he was the author of a comic book. His first ever official, let me backtrack here. His first Marvel comic, he had created another comic book, which I think I'll talk about a little later here. Just seeing if I had it in my notes or not. I'll just mention it now because I may have just ignored it there. One of my favorite series, if not my favorite series, Frey, which was a 1,000-year sequel to Buffy the television show. So that was his first ever comic book that he's written. Mm-hmm. And but now Marvel is bringing him in to write the Astonishing X-Men comic book, in which they gave him full control and being like, here's the characters that are like active right now, who do you want for your team? And he started picking all of his characters, his Emma Frost, his Cyclops, his Wolverine, his Kitty Pryde, his Beast, and there he goes, he has his Astonishing X-Men team. So I'm at this con, got my tickets to meet him and get pictures with him at the booth and do all Buffy-related things. I didn't really care about, you know, about this. I'm just like, oh, he's written some X-Men. That's cool. And I want to say I'm going to give Brent the credit on maybe killing time in between us doing our individual things that he tracked down the first, I think, three issues at the time that were released at the time of his appearance. And I'm pretty sure Brent, he's just like, oh, hey, I found these are the Joss Whedon comics. I'm like, oh, sweet, thanks. And I'm handing this issue over to you here to take a look.
This cover.
This one's not autographed. I have a different one that's autographed by the artist John Cassidy. And so you're in good hands with that issue.
This is the first time I've ever seen this.
Yeah, so The Astonishing X-Men.
Oh.
I meet Joss Whedon. I complete that, you know, Buffy's done, Angel's done. Just like, he's going on to Firefly, Serenity. I'm just like, you know what? I just had this huge experience. While I'm killing time for the weekend and waiting in lines, I have the first three issues in my lap at the comic book convention. And here I am. I'm like, well, I love the X-Men. That's what got me into Marvel. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I love Joss Whedon. That's been my obsession for the last, you know, whatever, 6 to 7 years at that point. He's writing the X-Men. And I'm like, all right, I'm reading it. And from that very first comic that you just set down... Mm-hmm. That is not the last time that I set down a comic book.
Yeah.
Because that is the first time after 10 years hiatus where I cannot stop picking up comic books. Comic books, like the rest of his Astonishing X-Men run over the next couple years, he ended up doing, it was like 24, 25 issues. There's a couple bonus things in there or something, some annuals or whatever. Ultimate Fantastic Four. That was a comic I started picking up. Wonder Woman, I started picking that up. Because going into 2005 is when the Fantastic Four movie happened, which was pretty huge for them because they had a 90s movie that was never released. And it's something that I don't even know if there's any. I've never looked on eBay, but it's one of those things that is just so well kept.
It's so good that they don't want people to see it.
Exactly.
they don't want to make the other movie production companies feel bad.
Exactly.
That's basically what it is.
That is the perfect definition of that.
Yeah.
So 2005 was big for comic books, so while we're living in the X-Men and Spider-Man world, now we're starting to branch out in the Fantastic Four world. I absolutely love that movie, and that's what led me into getting those Ultimate Fantastic Four issues. And that was probably one of my first, that went to like 60 issues or something like that. I think that was my first full collection of like a long-running series. Once I got back into comics again. Yes, you have something to say?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Okay.
Because my origin story starts around 2003.
Okay.
And as you were talking, I had an epiphany.
Uh-oh.
And I think you and I were at the same con. And I'm being dead serious. We did not talk about this before we started recording.
This is me finding this out now.
And
we've been hanging out, it's less than a year
at
this point of this recording, so
a lot to learn. At the time, I did not appreciate it, but I had a really good friend named Nate, and he was the one that originally tried getting me into comics. He was one of the guys that would buy back issues. Like, he would find all these really old X-Men, and he had some connections. And he actually got me to go to a con with him. And as I was preparing a couple notes of what I was going to talk about, I'm estimating that it was either 2003, possibly 2004, that I went to this con with him.
All right.
And it was in Chicago. So that leads me to believe it has to be this Wizard World con. It has to be.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other con in Chicago during this time that we would have went to, that he would have been that hyped to say, hey, you need to spend $100 and we're going to go to this con together.
Admission-wise.
Exactly.
Because then it has to be Wizard, because anything like Wizard was the huge thing. Anything less than that would have probably just been like, oh, $20 to get in, or $10 to get in, or $5. It would have been just like a little basement, church basement sale or something.
And at the time, I remember being extremely overwhelmed. There was so much to look at. There were so many comic books.
Oh, yeah.
There were so many different little sections that you could go to see these comic book creators. And I remember enjoying myself. And I remember enjoying immersing myself in that culture.
Uh-huh.
But to this day, I almost, in a way, I regret it. because I didn't appreciate it at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like 3 or 4 years ago, or no, I've been like, now it's almost 8 years ago when I went to my first wine tasting. Because, you know, I'm in the beverage industry. For people that don't know, I'm like, what is this shit? I don't want to drink this. Oh, this tastes nasty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't appreciate it then.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the same thing. And just, yeah, hearing this, it kind of blows my mind because there's a very good chance that in 2003, 16 years ago, we were in the same city at that con together.
You were that prick that got that last slice of pizza,
yep,
weren't you?
Yep.
Because I pointed to Brent and like, look at this fucking guy. I'm like, I
was
the one that even like comics.
Yeah, I was the one that was pointing and laughing at you.
Coming from the guy who, at that point, I still wasn't, you know, back into comics or anything. And I'm still all like, hey, that's cool, you know?
That was actually, that con was the first time I actually spent money on comic books.
Awesome.
I had no direction. I didn't know what to get. I think he was a little, at the time, he was more focused about kind of doing what he wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I picked up some Green Lantern books.
All right.
Don't give a shit about Green Lantern. So it's kind of funny. How many years later? No, I wouldn't pick up a Green Lantern book.
Green Lantern's not your favorite character.
It certainly is not. And that's what, yeah. And I just didn't know. I was like, oh, I like Green Lantern. Had no idea what was coming out of my mouth.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a ring.
Yeah. I can get a ring.
Exactly.
I graduated.
So that was actually probably the first thing that I ever bought was at this con in Chicago in 2003, Green Lantern books. I think I still have them. I'm pretty sure I still have them.
I hope you do,
yeah.
Even if they're not your favorite character. It's good to always have that because it's now a memento piece.
It absolutely
is. It's the thing that started the fire.
So this just hearing this is blowing my mind because it's either I'm leaning towards 2003. It could be 2004, but I'm almost positive it was just like a year and a half after I graduated high school.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm just it's crazy.
And I should have brought out my little Joss Whedon figure that I do have.
Yeah, look at that guy.
Just to kind of be our own little conversation pieces.
He'd be proud.
He's directing our podcast at the moment. So 2005, not only a Fantastic Four, but now something that broadens my comic book collecting even further. Sin City comes out.
Oof.
Have you seen the Sin City movies?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, I remember seeing Sin City opening night. Leaving it and just being like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
I'm like, it wasn't entertaining to me. I was just like, I don't understand. Like, the dialogue was, everything was so dark, and I'm just like, I didn't know what was going on. And I did the research, and I started looking at the comics and the graphic novels for Sin City. And I'm just like, holy crap, this looks exactly like the movie. You know, or the movie looks exactly like the comics.
Yeah, there you go.
And I went back a second time to a movie that I didn't like going to the first time. And I absolutely loved it. I didn't even read those comics. I just looked at the reference point. And that second time through probably just helped with story and just letting it all soak in. All of a sudden, right from there. And plus, Jessica Alba was a big, big sell on that,
sure,
too. I've been a fan of her since 97. And I got to tell her that when I met her. That Sin City, that opened up where then I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy these things. And I have been a big Sin City fan since. V for Vendetta happened. So I'm a big Natalie Portman fan at the time with the Star Wars prequels.
Yep.
And Where the Heart Is movie is one of my favorite movies, which you won't normally hear in any other geek comic book related podcast. People talking about Where the Heart Is. That movie's amazing. But V for Vendetta happened. That was another one of those just... That one I did remember enjoying the first time around, but that second viewing just meant so much of just being like, this makes a lot more sense.
I remember the first time I saw that movie, and I don't know if it was just over my head at the time, or I didn't have that that deep thought going into it, but I was like, I don't know what the hell I just watched.
Yeah.
And I remember understanding it a lot better the second time.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of those movies that it made a lot more sense to me. The second go around.
And I remember telling someone at work that too, where we're talking about V for Vendetta and I was just going nuts over it. And he's just like, I didn't understand it. It felt so weird. And then I just said, I'm like, honestly, watch it a second time.
Yeah.
He watched it a second time, came back to me. He's like, that movie's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it just definitely, definitely help. So now the comic book movies, you know, we're kind of veering away from, you know, we're getting the awesome superhero movies, but now we're getting awesome comic book movies outside of superheroes. So Sin City and V for Vendetta. But carrying on, Serenity was coming out that same year. And big fan of Nathan Fillion, who is shares the same last name as you.
Yeah, he's my cousin.
Yeah.
Oh, your, wait, what?
Cousin? What?
I think maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, all that's unofficial. Allegedly.
Yeah, okay. Allegedly. Yeah.
So Nathan Fillion, become a big fan because of Firefly and Serenity. So I remember looking online just being like, you know, what else is this guy in? I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, 2006, which is the year we're going into now, he's doing this movie called Slither. I'm like, what's Slither? I don't care. I'm like, Nathan Fillion's the star of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I only know him as Captain Malcolm Reynolds. Let's see what else he's got. So I see an announcement for a comic book convention, or a horror convention. Excuse me, not a comic book convention. A horror convention centered around the genre of horror movies. And the director, writer and director of Slither is going to be there, James Gunn. His wife is going to be there, Jenna Fischer, who is Pam from The Office, who is also a star of the movie. Nathan Fillion is going to be there, who is the star of the movie, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Rooker, Greg Henry.
Jeez, why have I not watched this yet?
I don't know, but I am holding this movie in my hands right here. And this shows you how old it is, because it's the HD version.
DVD.
Yeah, the HD DVD version, which also has the DVD version, too, on the flip side. So this format eventually died, and the Blu-ray won over. But I own Slither on the HD format. So I'm at this con in Chicago, and I get to meet James Gunn. I don't know who the heck this guy is. I get an autograph for him. I get an autograph from him, and I meet Jenna Fischer, I meet Elizabeth Banks. They tell us we can get a picture with one person in the line. I'm there because of Nathan Fillion, who's at the very end of the line. And so I'm like, all right, I'm not getting pictures with James Gunn or any of these people. Michael Rooker, I skip him. Like him from All Reds and all that stuff. But I'm like, Nathan is the reason why I'm there.
Yep.
So that is my introduction to James Gunn, which comes a lot more important to my extreme comic book love as we carry on here. So Slither happens, James Gunn happens, 2006, X-Men 3 comes out. X-Men 3, which I will speak for the internet, which majority is probably one of the least praised X-Men movies. It is, at this moment, my favorite of all of the X-Men movies, and I accept it for what it is. I can separate the comics from the film and the adaptations and the themes, and I could see a lot of people not liking it because it doesn't do a lot of Dark Phoenix, doesn't do a lot of stuff for her, and maybe failed on that attempt for people expecting to see that character. They were probably let down on that. But I'm seeing something, a movie based on a concept where there could be a cure for the mutants. Well, that idea sounds very familiar because there's a comic book called The Astonishing X-Men in which Joss Whedon wrote that very story. Now, it wasn't an adaptation into that movie. He has nothing, no credits to that movie, I don't think. Has nothing to do with it. He wasn't in that business. He was doing his own thing. But Summer Glau had auditioned for Kitty Pryde, and she called Joss Whedon right after being like, I just auditioned for Kitty. She didn't end up getting it, unfortunately. But Ellen Page, awesome. And she tells Joss Whedon, she's like, they didn't have a full script done, but I read from Astonishing X-Men comics that you wrote. So they were using physical Joss Whedon comics. Mind you, this is way before the Avengers happens. Yeah. Joss Whedon written comics for auditionings for the X-Men movies. And so my worlds are starting to just really start to collide, even though Joss didn't have anything, creatively didn't have any credit with those movies at all. During 2006 is when the Civil War comic book happened. Mark Miller came to the Wizard World Comic Con, and I got to meet him. He signed my, you know, Civil War comic. Civil War is probably my first event that I actually collected as a comic book reader. Joss Whedon, I later found out, contributed to the story of Civil War in the sense of lending advice on how to tell the story and how to end it. This I just learned this past week. I never even knew that until now. So because he's in there with the Astonishing X-Men and all of that stuff, so he's, you know, it's kind of in the creative, just being like, here's my thoughts on to tell this stuff. So it's kind of cool to see that he's got the, you know, he helped plant some of the seeds in the comic book, as well as leading into the Civil War movie, which we just recently saw. Like, that movie wouldn't happen if you didn't have Avengers and Age of Ultron. So, once again, still talking a lot about movies, but it's really starting to amp up now because 2008 happens. You know what 2008 is and the importance of the movie and the comic book industry?
That's got to be the first Iron Man movie?
Iron Man comes out. Now, I talked about being an X-Men fan and Batman and all that kind of stuff, Spider-Man. Iron Man happened, and Iron Man was never in any of my reads, and, like, he was never on my radar, which, if you didn't read comic books, that was very much the same opinion for everybody. So when Iron Man came out, Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man, two very risky things. Marvel is creating their first studio film where they didn't have rights to their main characters, their Spider-Man and their X-Men. They could not make Fantastic Four. They could not make those movies. They're like, who do we have? We have Iron Man. I go to the theater because I'm like, oh, it's another superhero movie, Marvel, whatever. I came out just being like, oh, shit. So now these movies are really starting to influence my comic book buying, whereas going back to the Batman, the early X-Men and the early Spider-Man, I said right here that I wasn't buying those comics at all. But now, walking out of Iron Man, sure enough, Marvel had the Invincible Iron Man series going on. So I picked up those comics, and I collected that whole run. Because I'm like, shit, I love that movie. I'm going to read some comics about it. So that starts getting the ball rolling. Were you there with the Iron Man introduction?
I certainly was. I saw that movie, and I mean, I would have been the definition of somebody going to that movie knowing zero. About I knew who Iron Man was. But I didn't, other than I knew some dude flew around and I think maybe he has powers, or I don't know, maybe it's a suit. I mean, I knew nothing.
There was part of me that honestly I probably still thought he was like the Rocketeer or something.
Sure.
Because he looks I don't know where those rights lie, but those characters like look visually pretty similar.
These movies deserve a lot of credit for getting me especially in to comic books, because otherwise I don't know if I ever would have been reading them.
So. And that's where it's really starting to influence, where I'm seeing these movies. I saw the Fantastic Four movie in 2005. I bought that comic. I saw Sin City. I bought that comic. Bought V for Vendetta. I bought that graphic novel. Now that I see Iron Man, I bought those comics. 2008 is also important because that is when the Kick-Ass comics come out. And my buddy Brent Strasberg, co-host of the AB Conversation podcast, nice plug. He is controlling. We subscribed to a comic book store, Pull List, over in Menominee Falls, and he did a lot of. I would give him credit for doing. He did all the ordering and stuff, and he knew what I liked, and we picked up a lot of the same stuff. But then he mentioned, he's like, "Oh, there's something called Kick-Ass that's coming out." And then, you know, it's written by Mark Miller, who did Civil War. And he did the Ultimate Fantastic Four initial run with Bendis. And I'm just like something called Kick-Ass. I'm like, that sounds pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the perfect title for a book. Because I'm like, yeah, I'll buy it, you know. Put it on there, buy me a copy. And reading it, just being like, this is some of the best shit ever. I'm just like, I jumped right into that. And he was at that, we'll jump ahead that far. Kick-Ass Comics. Kick-Ass is where my obsession with Mark Miller started. And even though I was collecting his other stuff, I still wasn't like, I'm buying everything Mark Miller. Yeah. Kick-Ass was just like, all right, I'm buying.
This guy's legit.
Yeah, anything with Mark Miller's name, it was basically Brent. I'm just like, add that to my list, you know, buy that for me, throw it in my pile. I gave him the money, he bought them, and just, he was my comic book drug dealer, and just in the way of doing the physical work and doing it, and I just gave him the money for it. 2010 was the Kick-Ass movie. Probably the quickest turnaround for any comic book property into a movie ever. Because everything we just talked about had existed for quite some time. I mean, that could be very well the first time that, and correct me if I'm wrong, because please, you know, I would like to be educated on that. That the fact that they were doing the comics and the movie was getting completed before he finished doing all of the comics for that story. And he brought it to the Wizard World Comic Con. And I was within, me and Brent were within the first several hundred people to see the first ever footage. And it was the scene in the field when Big Daddy was shooting, testing the shooting range and the bulletproof vest on Mindy. And all of that stuff was happening. And it was just like, oh my God, these comic books are just coming to life, you know? And just everything for me mm-hmm. is working hand in hand in that sense. So that was a pretty big year in 2010. As we jump in, 2010 got interesting because Joss Whedon, going back to him now, Astonishing X-Men is wrapped up, you know, Dr. Horrible had happened at this point. He himself has this quote where he goes, his career was on the skids. He had directed 2 episodes of The Office. He did an episode of Glee. You know, him doing other people's shows was something very new. He started off in a writer's room. He's written for Roseanne and stuff like that. He's got a lot of good credits to his name, a lot of screenwriting credits, and worked as a script doctor is the official term for it. But when he was saying that same year that his career was on the skids, July 2010, you know what? I'm going to back this up to April 1st, 2010. I go on WhedonS.com, and there's a headline saying, Joss Whedon to write and direct the Avengers movie. Because at the end of Iron Man, we found out that that's when Samuel Jackson name-dropped the Avengers, and we knew that we're going to get a Captain America movie, we're getting Thor, getting the Hulk movie that happened the same year as Iron Man. We knew that the Avengers was coming, but we never knew who was doing it. It seemed like Jon Favreau was probably going to do it because he did the first 2 Iron Mans. And I read that on WhedonS.com and then a bunch of articles across the internet. Joss Whedon set to write and direct the Avengers movie. And I laughed at it just being like,
It's April Fool's. Yeah, I know.
I'm like, it's April Fool's. I'm like, great joke. I'm like, for a second, my heart skipped a beat. But then I'm just like, oh, it's April Fool's. That's not happening. Couple months went by, July, and they did their Comic-Con presentation.
So you still didn't believe it for all that time?
No, and it never really went on as official news.
Oh, okay.
It was, a lot of people felt the same thing, that it was just rumors, because then they started rumoring, they're like, oh, Eliza Dushku and Sarah Michelle Gellar are going to be in the Avengers movie, and everyone just started adding fuel to this fake thing. And then Marvel, and like it happens now, they'll announce something that could be official, internet official for a month, but then Marvel won't officially
acknowledge
it
even. Yeah.
Even though it is, but they still wait for their proper press releases. Because the San Diego Comic-Con happened, they brought out Joss Whedon, set to write and direct the Avengers movie. Much like experiencing meeting my Buffy writer and getting the Astonishing X-Men comics, my world's colliding. Now the worlds are colliding on a huge scale. The fact that he did one failed, you know, Serenity was quote-unquote a failed movie. It didn't spawn a sequel. It didn't, you know, it did okay. It wasn't, you know, a flop or anything. It just, it did okay.
Yeah.
His career was on the skids. And now he's brought in for a project, a 50-year history of an Avengers movie happening. Generations upon generations of comic book fans waiting for this movie. For this guy who's directing his second movie, and is the first one in the Marvel movies to write and direct, doing both jobs. And he also served as looking over. He did some treatment work on Captain America and Thor, getting those characters molded behind the scenes before we knew, like years before we even knew that they were. He was coming in to kind of mold that because he's like, well, this is what I'm writing for the Avengers in 2002 or 2012. So, this is how we should have Captain America talk in this movie. This is how we should have Thor react. And he was changing things, being like, this is when
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and a lot of us didn't even know that because that was all just kind of under the table. He was kind of brought in. And with him doing Astonishing X-Men, my buddy Sean and Jerry over at the GX pod, the X-Men podcast that they do, which isn't current, I should say that, the X-Men pod that they did, they brought me on for Astonishing X-Men. We talked about Astonishing for like an hour and a half or something, and they had confirmed that like Joss Whedon doing Astonishing X-Men was a very cinematic comic book. First time that they ever looked at that on a cinematic approach, and you know, when you have someone who's done TV four TV shows and all that kind of stuff. So the Joss Whedon fuel to the fire. Now I'm starting to be like, all right, I want to start reading some Thor and some Captain America. And I'm starting to just really pick up everything. Now, are you on the bandwagon for all these Marvel movies?
Let's see. I've seen, if you're asking if I've seen them all in the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
At this point, I am 100% up to date.
And are you collecting any books at this time? I had mentioned some of the stuff that I've been picking up with that first con that you did. Are you at that point yet, or we're almost there, I think?
We would have to back up. We'd have to back up a little bit.
All right.
Now, if you're asking me if I'm doing like a weekly poll or anything like that, I am not doing that yet.
All right.
I had, at this time though, I have actually read my first trade paperback.
Ooh.
And this is the definition of jumping into comic books. The first full story I ever read was Watchmen. So
what a great introduction.
So, and I actually, that was one that I read twice, because the first time I read it, something didn't click with me.
Yeah.
Because if you remember in Watchmen, there's almost a story within a story.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, well, am I supposed to read this separately?
Was that the pirates?
Am I supposed to read this separately? Do I read this first? And I remember getting frustrated with it. And I'm like, I don't get this. How am I supposed to?
I still don't get it.
I know. And then when I read it the second time, and the third time, and the fourth time. I remember, the second time I had a much better understanding, because at this point, the Watchmen movie has been out a couple years.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I forgot to mention it. I should have mentioned it.
That's okay. And I remember after watching that movie, thinking, you know, this is incredible. And I saw the trade paperback. I think I bought it from, like, Target.
Yeah.
And I just randomly, I'm like, I'm going to buy it and read it.
And Watchmen could have been one of those things that really opened the floodgates, too, because just like the other things, I saw that movie, and I bought that graphic novel and just devoured it.
You know, if you think back to all the comic book movies that there have been, Watchmen, on the scale of, in terms of how dark it is way up at the top.
Yeah, yeah.
And after, you know, you...
It's very grown up.
You see, you know, your Iron Man, those movies are fun. And they're phenomenal. And then you watch, Watchmen, and you're like, well, this is way different. Mm-hmm. There's blood and violence and sex, and there's swearing, and it's completely different. And I think that movie is what really drew me to just go out on my own and buy something and then read it.
Awesome.
So I've had in a little bit, I'm going to tell you, I had other influences in my life to get me to get over that leap.
Awesome.
So I'll let you keep. I'm in my head. I'm on your timeline, and I'm going to interject.
Good.
Yeah, so
2012 happens when, and even though I did skip over, like, you know, the resurgence of Batman with Batman Begins and Dark Knight. I mean, I saw Dark Knight 7 times in the theater, like, you know. So I'm very much into that, even though I'm talking a lot about Marvel. I saw all those too, but this is really starting to you know, the Joss Whedon thing is really just when my Earth 1 and Earth 2 are just crossing over, and just in the eclipse or something, they're just being in front, you know, mending with each other. In 2012, I was able to get an early ticket, thanks to Twitter, to see the Avengers movie 3 weeks early. Now, I've been waiting for 2 years at this point, since they announced Joss was going to do it, and I'm like, oh my god, this is going to be huge. And I was nervous for him, and I'm sure he was a hell of a nervous do something like this, and everyone was excited, but just like, I'm going in just being like, this is my guy. I'm like, this is the band I've been listening to since 97 that people are now going to start listening to. Obviously, he's got a huge fan base with all of his television shows, but movie-wise, this is his big introduction, and there's so much riding on his shoulders. And so I see this movie. I waited 12 hours in line 3 weeks early to be the first one to walk into that building. Sitting down there, they did a bunch of cool prizes and trivia, and I won a little stuffed Thor doll that they threw out in the audience, and people answering questions and stuff like that, and the hype was so real. In the presence of a 100% packed 300-seat-plus theater, everyone was about to see The Avengers 3 weeks early, and getting chills just talking about it now. and the movie happened, I swear to God, I just had tears down my face during the entire movie, just because I'm like, this is beautiful on the Avengers level, this is beautiful on a Joss Whedon level, this is one of the best movie experiences I will ever have.
And at that time, you are in disbelief that you're actually watching it. Like, is this really happening?
Everybody in that theater, and I'll say everybody because I was looking at so many of those people and what they were wearing. Everyone's all wearing their Marvel stuff. I'm wearing Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy t-shirt, you know, front and center. I was literally in the direct, exact middle of the entire theater because I had the first seat as I went in. Yep. I'm like, yep, I'm picking the best seat in the house. Had Sarah Michelle Gellar. I'm representing Buffy and Joss all the way through this. And everybody is laughing and clapping, but it's not in the distractive way. Everyone is on, literally on the same page,
awesome,
eating the hell out of this. I will never have a better movie screening, with the exception of Serenity when I saw that early back in 2005. but this is probably bigger because you have the Marvel fans and the Joss Whedon fans all in one thing. The Serenity movie was just one fandom together. And walking out of that movie was just like I can't believe it. And it was a 10 a.m. screening. So we walked out, and it's like 12:30. I went to a C2E2 con directly from there and met Amy Okuda from the Guild. So, like, I walked out of the best, like, one of the best, if not the best, comic book movie ever made, going into a comic book convention full of people who had not seen that movie and will not see that movie for 3 weeks.
Who very well, maybe they didn't know it was being screened, or did they know? I'm sure people were talking about it.
It was a very limited thing. If you didn't react quick on Twitter to sign up on a reserve thing and wait in line 12 hours like I did, I was waiting, you know, a lot longer than the next person that came in line. But it was all just part of, I'm like, I drove to Chicago, I'm not missing this experience.
No.
And what an experience it was, because I ended up seeing it 4 times on the official opening day, 7 times that opening weekend, which was technically Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because there were still midnight screenings at that point.
Sure.
So it wasn't like, oh, a bonus day of Thursday, early screening or something. So I saw it 7 times for that whole weekend, and I totaled out at 23 paid times to see Marvel's The Avengers, written and directed by Joss Whedon. And like I said, Joss Whedon is the band that I was listening to in 97, but now everyone is discovering, everyone's praising the hell out of Joss Whedon.
That is awesome. So we are now at 2012.
Yes.
In our timeline.
Yes. We're getting very close because we're recording this in 2016.
Yes. So this is at the time when I was at a bonfire at my uncle's house. Okay.
Right.
So that was something we always did in the summer.
And it happened outside, so I wouldn't know anything about that unless I'm waiting for a movie.
Yeah, you should go outside every once in a while.
What's that?
Right. So here we are at a bonfire, and it's 2012, and the Avengers movie has just ended. And a really close family friend was at this bonfire, and I've talked to you about him before. His name is Ed.
Yes.
Ed and my uncle collected comic books when they were younger. My uncle Joe stopped years and years and years ago, while Ed continuously collected, which was really exciting. And I remember after this Avengers movie, we were talking about it, and I know that he was reading them on a regular basis, but for whatever reason, nothing just clicked in my head really to talk to him more about it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, I had already read Watchmen.
Yeah.
Watchmen.
Yep.
And we were at this bonfire, and he was, you know, talking about it a little bit, and I was giving him a really hard time about it, which is funny because it was something that I was actually kind of interested in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just giving him a hard time about it. Like, I don't really get it, man. Because he was like 45 at the time or whatever. And I'm like, how can you? I just don't get it. Like, how are they even entertaining? How can you read them, like, all the time? I just don't get it. And, like, the movies are so much better. And blah, 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 blah. And just, like, completely harassing him about it.
This sounds perfect from a guy who's at a bonfire on the opening of the Avengers movie.
And it's funny because, you know, I love the guy.
Yes.
And he knows I'm trying to get under his skin.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you know what, Ryan? I'm going to stop over at your house next week, and I'm going to give you something. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Give me another beer, whatever. Shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Just what? I'm like, oh, whatever. So he did just that.
All right.
And he actually gave me It was the very first... I can't say it was the first comic book I read, because I did page through those Green Lanterns that I bought.
Yeah.
And I did read The Watchmen. But I didn't really have a true appreciation for the storytelling aspect of it. And what he gave me was the first full comic series I ever read. And that was Astro City by Kurt Busiek. I remember reading the first, still to this day, I've got goosebumps right now. Still to this day.
R.L. Stein is suing you.
Yeah, right? Issue number one, volume one of Astro City is still the best, for me, number one issue I have ever read of any comic in my life.
Awesome.
It absolutely changed my life.
I can relate to that, because I think I'm holding a comic that I could relate to with the Astonishing X-Men number one.
It was storytelling like I've never seen before.
I'm petting Astonishing X-Men number one now.
He's really creepy about it, too.
Thankfully...
It's making me uncomfortable.
This is like a Dr. Claw thing from from Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's a name I haven't heard in how many years. And he gave me every single comic. I think at the time it was probably a good 50 or 60 total. There were multiple volumes because the writer, creator, he was actually really sick on and off. So it stopped quite a bit.
All right.
Recently, about 2 years ago now, he was able to start writing it again. So now it's current. But what it was a superhero story with characters that you didn't know, because they're just independent comic characters. But the stories were told from the point of view of the citizens that live in that city.
Awesome.
And it absolutely just blew my mind. I think I read those 50 comics in maybe 3 days.
Awesome.
And it was just me constantly calling him every day, talking to him about Astro City. And I'm like, what else is there? What else is there to read? What else can I... It became... Overnight, it was just an obsession. And I feel like running into my comic room and getting it right now, actually. And it was, I can't even talk about it. It's so hard for me to put into words how much I look back at that now and how much I appreciate that whole series.
Yeah.
I mean, you got, and Alex Ross did the covers. There's some app there. The covers are gorgeous. The interiors are beautiful. The storytelling is just flawless. And I could reread Astro City every year for the rest of my life. No problem.
I've got a good feeling that that is going to be one of our spotlights in which I will be reading it for the first time.
Yeah.
I've only heard of it and literally know nothing beyond what you just told me. So
that is where I started. And then I just started buying pretty much everything. After Astro City, I bought the first trade paperback of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Because the show just started.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, let's read this. Oh. In the matter of, I want to say, in the matter of 2 weeks, I had like 15 trades of that.
Yeah.
And that is when it really started to go, I started to go crazy. And I was more attracted to the independent titles.
All right.
I didn't quite start my Batman obsession yet.
Okay.
But I was reading more independent titles. That's when I got issue number one of Saga.
Awesome.
Which it started my whole loving science fiction. Mm-hmm. Because that's like Star Wars, Star Trek, like just all your really popular science fiction titles. Movies, TV shows, just all crammed together in one. And that's when I was like, okay, maybe I can get on this comic thing.
Awesome.
And pretty much the guy that I leaned on was Ed.
Yes.
And he loved it. He had another guy to talk comics about. And it's funny because, you know, sometimes you have inside jokes with everybody. Even while I was reading him, when I was still talking to comics about him up until like four or five months ago, I was still giving him shit like, dude, why do you read comics still? Knowing that if we ever talked on the phone, that's pretty much we either talked about wrestling or we talked about comic books, you know. So it's just great. Now, he has since passed away.
Yes.
He did pass away about, like, what, it's got to be about 4 or 5 months ago now. And guess who was able to get his collection? So,
yeah, you got to let me guess.
Yeah, right?
Does he have, like, any brothers or sisters?
He's got a cousin that you might know.
A cousin.
He's kind of famous.
Nathan?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I was able to inherit his comics.
Yes.
Now, that's 30 years, probably, no, like 35 years of collecting that I inherited. So, like, I haven't even began to be able to touch that. Like, I just, it's nearly,
you've got enough,
I mean.
You could stop buying new comics and you've got enough.
Yes.
To get you through.
But, of course, what fun would it be to not buy them?
Exactly.
you gotta have your weekly pulls.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah, I'm going to have to look for a new co-host.
Exactly. So, you know, it's just the passion that he had in collecting, it's like he passed it on to me.
That's awesome.
Which is the best way that I can put it. And, you know, earlier you were talking about Batman 66. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the Ninja Turtles cartoon. You're talking about the X-Men. You're talking about, like, the regular Batman movies. You know, so it's like I had this inside of me my whole life. It's like I could, it was like it was there and I was interested, but I just, no one, I guess, was there to just kind of give me that push to like, hey, maybe you should try reading this. And that Astro City was really the first thing that got me just blew my mind.
Awesome.
And yeah, that is really where my true origin starts is, you know, all these comic book movies that I loved were pretty much out already. Iron Man was out, Thor was out, Avengers. I think I saw the Hulk movie. Those were all out already, and just then was like, yeah, I can maybe check out a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. So, and here I am 4 years later. Something like that.
Yeah,
four or five years later. And I still consider myself a new reader.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever I'm looking at, you know, like comic book videos on YouTube, I always feel like, you know, there's still so much more for me to learn about the history of all these characters. Because I've only been really paying attention to it for a good 5 years.
I've got a little over 20 years collectively, and I still feel like there's so much I don't know.
Like, I remember we saw the X-Men movie, the new one.
Yes.
And I learned stuff from that movie. I'm like, crazy. It was just crazy. I barely knew who Quicksilver was.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, the history is so immense that you almost can't stop learning.
No, you'll never know enough.
Yeah. So after the first Avengers movie is basically when I got on board and I kind of went balls of the wall and read anything. You know, I was more DC because I'm a huge Batman fan. So I was reading almost anything Batman family related.
Yep.
Didn't read much Superman. Of course, I've read some of the main ones like Red Sun. And I've read, like, the Earth 2. I mean, it's not like I haven't read the stuff.
Yeah.
And if it's written well, I almost will read anything. I don't really care. As long as it's a good story. Of course, not Green Lantern.
Yeah, yeah. One exception.
Yeah, so. But yeah, that is, it's a very short history. It's a very short origin story for me. But it is, Astro City alone is just so near and dear to my heart. And especially with who gave it to me,
yeah.
Who was in my life, basically since I was born. He was friends with my parents, with my uncles. So since I was born, I knew this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, awesome. I've never been able to tell that story in such, you know, in depth I did just now. So feels good to get off the chest.
And as we're still sitting here in 2012, just when my worlds have officially collided when Joss Whedon released the very successful Avengers, became the third highest gross movie of all time. At that point, it has since been debunked one step lower by Jurassic World. But he basically made history enough that Marvel's like, we need more. We're signing on for number two. We're signing you on as like the creative. He overlooks all of the movies in their phases and just like, there was a thing in Thor 2 that was going wrong and they literally flew him to another country, jumped off the plane, literally onto the set, direct and rewrote a little something. They directed it. It worked. Got on the plane. Went back to writing Avengers 2.
Unbelievable.
My life was My life was complete, where my number one idol over everyone, yes, Stan, is, you know, co-creator of all the Marvel stuff I love and all that kind of thing, and George Lucas and Star Wars, and I can't believe what, you know, hour and 30 minutes without saying the word Star Wars, but that just shows you the podcast we got here. And so I didn't need, there was nothing more I could ask for. I've met the dude, and he's given me all this great stuff. How could it get better? Well, in July...
Wait, can it?
Well...
Oh, my goodness.
In July of 2012, they announced, over the last 2 years, they were talking about this movie called The Guardians of the Galaxy. That's a title. I'm like, it didn't click with me at all. I'm like, I didn't do research. I'm just like, well, I'll go see it because they're releasing it.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. And later I'd find out that I had that one issue I talked about an hour ago or so. And so I'm like, all right, cool. I'm like, Guardians, that's coming up. It's official. It's official now. Then they said who was going to be writing and directing it. And they mentioned a guy by the name of James Gunn. Now, if you go back about 15 minutes or so, I'm talking about James Gunn and Slither and Nathan Fillion. James Gunn, who I started devouring everything of. He's never written anything in comics, but like Joss Whedon, they've been reading comics all their life. I should have mentioned this earlier when somebody asked Joss prior to the movie coming out, how do you research and prepare to make this upcoming Avengers movie? And he goes, well, I've been writing this movie since I was like 9 years old. He's like, I've been reading these comics and you know, that's how he's been doing the research, because he's been a fan for like 40 years, you know. And much like James Gunn was brought in. So once I heard about that, I'm like, holy shit, James Gunn gets to do this now? And I'm not going to go on the in-depth story, but that same time period, that same week, James Gunn literally told his manager that, you know what, the movie thing isn't working out. I've been doing my independent movies, but it's not him doing some, you know, he wrote the Scooby-Doo movies and the Dawn of the Dead remake, and he's done some good stuff to get his foot in the door, but he said, I'm not really achieving what I set out to do. I've always wanted to make a sci-fi movie like a Star Wars, and he's like, that's why I make movies, Star Wars and Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. and he's like, I'm not making those kind of movies. And he said, I'm just going to concentrate doing like video games and maybe television work. He wrote the video game Lollipop Chainsaw, if you didn't know that. He told his manager, agent, and he's like, you know what? I'm done with the movies thing. Let's not even focus on that. And he goes, within that like 2 weeks, he gets a call from Marvel. They put a couple things on his plate saying, would any of these interest you? He goes in and rewrite some of the previous written script for Guardians of the Galaxy, a movie that we all love, that is very much Star Wars meets Indiana Jones, the very thing that he said he wasn't able to make those movies. And once he was announced for that movie, I went on the Marvel app, and I typed in Guardians of the Galaxy. Marvel being the marketing geniuses they are, Guardians of the Galaxy issue number 1 from 2008 with Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning was 99 cents for that issue 1. I'm like, all right, click, and I bought it. I read it. At the end of that issue, you see Captain America's shield frozen in the ice. And I'm like, because reading that, it has nothing to do with the Marvel Universe, first time reading Guardians, and also in the show Cap Shield at the end of that first issue. I'm like, oh my fucking God. And from that point on, just like how watching these movies, and I go buy those comics, now I'm getting very proactive with Guardians of the Galaxy, where I'm like, all right, they announced the movie. I'm going to buy a shit ton of comics before I see that movie. I go back to 1969, and I go through Wikipedia and a bunch of articles and searches, and I find out a master list of Guardians' first appearance in 1969 of January up until that day, and through trades and all of the 90s single first print issues through eBay. As of this moment, I own every single Guardians of the Galaxy appearance for the last 40 years or so. And that's when it started. I read all of those, which is like 200-plus. There were some hiatuses they had in there. But there is 200-plus comics in their full run. And I've read that twice leading up to that movie, like months before. Like,
that's awesome.
I just kept reading it.
Yeah.
I'm going into this movie, and that was a big risk for them, much like Iron Man, where, like, nobody knows Guardians, nobody knows these characters. Coming out in August, I bought a shit ton of toys, I couldn't believe they did it. I'm telling people, I'm like, just go see it. I'm like, you know, it's from the Marvel people, but, you know, it doesn't have the Avengers in it or whatever, but eventually it probably could, but I'm like, just trust me, it's going to be fun, just go see it. And I was so invested in that movie and the success of that movie that it felt like I wrote, like I was a producer on it, where I was like, felt like I was having anxiety of like going into it, just being like, I'm watching the tracking. I'm like, I sure hope people go see it. I'm like, no one's going to see it. It's going to be a bomb. And then it just like did twice or three times better than it meant to. And it got a sequel right before it even came out to the audience. And got, now Guardians, Rocket Raccoon and Groot are two of the most iconic movie characters for only existing since 2014.
Sure.
Everybody freaking loves them, and everyone's going to see them in 11 months when we go see a sequel to that movie. Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn, Joss Whedon, Avengers, everything's coming up me, basically. That is pretty current. And this last little part here, which then we can kind of go back and forth on. Creators. Some of my favorite creators, is just going to shoot these out here real quick. Stan Lee, met him 2012. I had him sign a restraining order against myself based on his episode of The Big Bang Theory, in which I explained to him. I have video of his smiling reaction to it, smiling Stan Lee, and he just goes, oh, that's funny. And I had a regular photo with him. I met him the following year where I dressed up as Spider-Man and zipped it up. I'm walking up to him. I wasn't going to show my face in this photo. I got a photo with my Aunt Sue, who really wanted to meet him, and I'm like, you know what? Let's both meet him. We'll split the price. I already met him, so I'm going to zip up in this photo. And in a way, you're getting a photo with Stan Lee and a Spider-Man. And I walk up to him. He didn't see my face at all. And he just goes, hey, there he is. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, Dad?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
like, you know, Spider-Man's dad. And so I got that. And then a year after that, at C2E2, I'm in a line for Hulk Hogan. And Stan Lee came out of a photo session. I'm the only one standing there. Stan Lee has maybe one or two people next to him. It's not a big crowd. There's a bunch of MTV Teen Wolf fans there. So all these, you know, younger generations of girls and stuff. And, you know, they don't know who's walking by here. And that's not a slam on them. I'm just saying, setting the scenario where it's Stan Lee walking towards me and getting ready to walk past me. And I just go, like, hello, Stan. And he's like, hello there. And, you know, he's always in Stan Lee mode.
Yeah.
No matter where you catch him, he just got done taking a shit ton of photos.
It's almost like Stan Lee is always doing a parody of himself.
Exactly. And he is. And when people say, like, oh, who's your favorite Marvel character? It's just like, you know, Stan Lee is one of my favorite Marvel characters. Not only just because he's been a character since he's been doing this, but he's a character in all of his cameos. That leads me perfectly into this. After that happened, I felt so criminal that it was so easy to do that, where Stan Lee just walked by me. No one else was, you know, pestering him, and I just greeted him and nodded, and he gave me the same respect back. I texted Erica, one of my longest friends, and I told her exactly what I just told you. And she goes, one of the best things I've ever had anyone send me. That's why I bring it up here. She goes, Stan Lee just made a cameo in your life. And I'm like,
I like that.
That could not have been said any, like,
yeah.
It was the perfect way to phrase that. So Stan Lee, obviously with me being a big Marvel fanboy, Scotty Young, absolutely love him, John Cassidy, Katie Cook, the Revival crew, which is Mike Norton, Tim Seeley, Jenny Friesen. She says, I pronounced it wrong and I wrote this here. It's Jenny Friesen. She goes, Friesen like prison. That's what she says to get that name right. Len Wein, which when I met Len Wein, I didn't at all mention the fact that he created Wolverine or Swamp Thing. I was there to talk about how much I love the Before Watchmen Ozymandias series. So the fact that I met one of the crucial characters who created two awesome, amazing comic book characters, but I didn't even talk about
that. So he didn't say, we didn't mention Wolverine.
No, and then that really, I told him, like, you took a character that I didn't care for in the movie, like, it didn't mean much. I'm like, yeah, I don't care about him. And I read that Before Watchmen series, and I got to tell him, like, you made him my favorite Watchmen character based on that. So he signed that book, and I met Jay Lee this year, who is the artist for that. And it's one of my rare books where I have the artist and the writer both sign it in person. And I got to tell him the same thing, too. Brian Michael Bendis, when I met him, I had a Hungarian version of the Ultimate Spider-Man comic from a friend that I know from Hungary that I've met through my filmmaking days. And he's a big Gilmore Girls fan, and I knew that going into it. And I got to tell him, I'm like, hey, as a fellow Gilmore Girls DVD purse owner, all seven seasons are in one giant Gilmore Girls purse. He owns it too. And we connected on that level. And the Hungarian comic, he's known to have a lot of typos when he writes all his million scripts that he does a week for all of his comic books. I had this Hungarian comic. I slammed it on the table in front of him. And, like, honestly, that could have been, like, risking security coming up, being like, whoa, we got something going on here. And he got startled a little bit because he looked at it. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, I can understand a couple spelling mistakes, but I'm like, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he was still like, what? And he looked at it, and he busted out laughing once he really, he's flipping through my book, and he signed it, and once it was all written in Hungarian.
Yeah.
And he's just like, where'd you get this? From the country with the worst paper? Because it was such a greasy type of, it was a weird old school paper or something. Brian Michael Bendis, Jeff Loeb, he's on my, like, you know, I've met him, instant pull list. Kevin Smith, he's right in there. Joe Quesada, he's in there. Joss Whedon, Kevin Smith again, I wrote that twice. Mark Miller, who I've met twice now, and I've had Twitter interactions with him to the point where Mark Miller, creator of Kick-Ass and all the freaking stuff he's doing now with Kingsman and like Starlight.
Isn't he writing every single book ever?
He's got a huge path of creator-owned comics that he's going nuts on right now. And he's written everything for DC, everything for Marvel. He tweeted at me saying he was jealous of me because I own arcade machines. And I'm like, you're jealous of me?
Yeah.
He even reconfirmed that jealousy when I met him a second time when I brought that story up.
And you said, what, you want to switch lives? Or
I'm just like, I'm happy to switch lives with you. That would be great. Brian Posehn, Jonathan Luna, Dan Slott, Robbie Thompson, Stacey Lee, Marguerite Bennett, Gail Simone, Chris Claremont, Mike Mignola, Nick Spencer, Phil Noto, Ryan Brown, and I've been in the presence of Jim Lee and Frank Miller. All of those people are some of my favorite fucking comic book creators.
This is the best case scenario that could have happened, and we didn't plan this, but I'm going to be mentioning some of my favorite writers and creators. You didn't say a single one that I had written down. So that is amazing, and it's not that, of course, I have respect for all these, but some of the ones that I wrote down here just really go back to 4 years ago when I originally started reading. On top of the list is going to be Kurt Busiek in Astro City, something that I don't know if you've read, but he wrote Marvels. Now, I can't remember if you read
what
that.
It is, but I haven't read it.
Marvels is, obviously, it's a four-story, well, actually, there's a zero issue, so it's a five issue.
We know a lot about zero issues.
Exactly, right?
At Four Comics sake.
Marvel series, and it's actually done in the Astro City style. So you actually have a Marvel superhero story that's being told from the point of view of a photographer.
That's awesome.
And it's done exactly, and Alex Ross does the interiors, which
sounds
is pretty
like
ridiculous.
Perfect team.
Mark Waid, I have to mention Mark Waid. If I go through my trade paperback and hardcover shelf, man, I don't know. He did one of the best Daredevil runs that I've ever read in my life. John Layman, now he's the writer and creator of Chew, which is probably the funniest thing that I've ever read in my life. Scott Snyder, I have to mention him.
Yes.
He's went on an unbelievable Batman run. Now his run is going to be ending. He's going to be picking it up in, I think it's called Batman, I can't think of it right now.
Is it the All-Star stuff?
Yes, the Batman All-Star. And of course, I have to give an honorable mention to Tom King.
Yes.
Now, the only thing that I have ever read from Tom King is his current Vision series.
Yes.
That's going to be ending, but it's going to be going 12 issues, and he is going to be doing the new Batman book for DC. I have to mention him.
Yes.
Brian K. Vaughan also is probably...
He should have been on my list.
Yeah. I would say, you know, Brian K. Vaughan probably is going to be number two. I hate to put these guys in a ranking, but if I think of things that I read and that I could read over and over and over, Saga, by far, is my favorite independent comic that I've ever read in my life.
Instant classic.
Absolutely. He also... wrote and created Ex Machina, and of course, one of your favorites is
The Runaways.
The Runaways, which I have, I think, the first four trades of that. Joe Hill, which is Stephen King's...
Do you know who the second writer is that took over for Brian K. Vaughan when he stopped Runaways?
I think I have it, and I cannot... Is it a Rodriguez? No, that's not it.
He's a guy who's standing on our table right here. Joss Whedon is the second writer ever to jump in on Runaways, because when Brian K. Vaughan ended his, Joss Whedon came on. There was more writers after him, but Joss was the second.
The embarrassing thing is, I think I actually have the trade of his, and yeah. I just have so much stuff now. So basically, we have to end this now, because I got to go read it.
Okay, right, bye,
this
everybody. Very second.
Yeah,
bye, everybody, bye.
And then the other one that I'm going to mention, this is going to be the last one. I started talking about Joe Hill, which is actually Stephen King's son. He wrote Lock and Key, which is a huge mind trip.
Comic Book Club, which is a podcast I listen to religiously, the host of that are like, somehow, I haven't even read it, but it's on my long list, they're in those books as characters. So these guys who run this podcast,
this is bizarre,
were like written in, and like some of them were killed off or something, and they always joke about it. But Lock and Key has always been on my gotta read that list.
And then last but not least, and I'm pretty sure this guy gets mentioned at least one time on every single comics podcast that's ever been created, is Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Sometimes his name is so obvious, but I think with the way modern comics are written now, I really think you have to give him a lot of credit, because he's the one that really took things in a much darker direction, which not everybody likes. But when you look at like how Batman is written now, I think a lot of that, you really have to trace it back. And even Alan Moore.
And even in conjunction with Frank Miller as far as the Batman stuff
Absolutely.
Goes.
I don't even think you said Frank Miller. Did you?
Yep.
Okay.
He's on here. Yep, because I said it at the end, I was in the presence of Jim Lee and Frank Miller.
I think it's safe to say that if a new comic book is going to be coming out, if one of these, between the two of us, if one of these names are going to be in that book, there's a really good chance we're at least going to get the first issue to at least try.
Yeah.
Because they very rarely let us down.
People I listed are those automatic pull lists, just being like, all right, whatever it is, I'm definitely going to read it. And there's a very rare chance that I'm not liking. Like Mark Miller, for example, there's not a single thing that he's written that that I've been, this one wasn't for me, so I'm not going to collect that one. Those are just, once you find someone you like, you stick with them, and so that's creators. And then what you had mentioned, what's good is that our lists are very different while we both agree on how credible each of those people are. That'll bring a great balance to this podcast when we show the different sides of everything, with you being like a little more DC heavy, I'm more Marvel heavy, and we both kind of meet in the middle with those independents.
And I think a lot of our independent stuff too is very different from one another.
Yeah, totally.
Hopefully the listeners are going to be entertained, but I think you and I are going to be entertained with each other, because
we're going to forget that this is recording.
Well, exactly. I'm looking at the time right now. I'm like, I think we did forget that it was recording.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's exciting, because I'm going to hear about some of these independent books that I maybe didn't pick up, but just by listening to you, you and I, our pull lists are going to change over the course of the next however many episodes this goes. I think we're going to be
7,000.
Yes, at least, just at a minimum.
And I didn't count next year yet.
Oh, okay, good.
So those are creators, and then I'm going to go real quick on going back to my list here. And those creators that I listed, majority of those people I've actually met, and I'll go in depth on those stories when they come up in the natural conversation, because I have an awesome Dan Slott story that I never get sick of telling. But that's a good teaser for listening to For Comic's Sake. Going back to it, though, some of my comic book records real quick. A year's worth of Age of Apocalypse back in, like, 94, 95. I read all the Age of Apocalypse stuff, all the crossover, everything. I own the big omnibus, which is, like, 1,100, 1,200 pages or something. I read all that in 7 days. All 11 years of The Walking Dead at that time, I read in 7 days. I have something about, you know, just knowing a week, being like, you know what, I got a week, I'm just going to read it all. All 7 Sin City books in a week, one per day.
That is a lot.
That was a thing where I'm like, I'm reading one per day, and that's how it's going to be. My ultimate record, pun intended, Ultimate Spider-Man. I read 33 comics issues of Ultimate Spider-Man in one day. That's my personal binge record in one continuous motion.
I'm sure it was raining that day, so you couldn't go outside, right?
Yeah, because I'm a big outdoors person. I'm more of an inside cat. And I'm more of a dog person, so I'm an inside dog. Okay, this is getting really bad. Just to kind of show, like, as I was talking about the movies and when the movies started to, when the announcements started getting me to be like, all right, I want to be ahead of the game and start reading, you know, 40 years worth of stuff prior to the movie. My second wind, if you will, which I'm assuming is going to be the constant wind, I have no plans to ever stop. I was a fool to miss those 10 years in between.
I've said that to many people because now I can see doing this for the rest of my life.
Yeah. We've got it. Like we said, if we stop buying new stuff, we've got enough to last us through of the stuff we do love.
Yep.
But there's continuously going to be great
stuff. Gotta keep up. That's the name.
So my average of comics when I was getting back into it leading up to the last like 2 or 3 years or so when it really started getting heightened, $10 to $15 a week. Now I'm spending $50 to $70 a week. And I'm just reading so many things. According to my MidtownComics.com subscription, it says I subscribe to 75 titles, 73 of which are regular and 2 are non. And some of those, you know, like, oh, this one's seasonal or something, or this one's discontinued for the moment.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what are the two that are not?
Yeah, I don't even know. Yeah. But comics honestly feel like they're for me only still, just like when I liked Buffy back in those days, where it is a very singular experience when you're, you know, you can watch a movie with 300 people, but you can't read a comic book with 300 people. But maybe with this podcast, sure, when we do their spotlights and stuff like that, maybe we can build up a community and we can kind of do that. But comics have always been like that, where it just feels like, since I never knew outside of Brent and the childhood friends, you know, up until you came along, mm-hmm, there was never anyone to talk about current comics as much as we have in the
Wait, last someone night. Else in Wisconsin reads comics? What?
Yeah, exactly. and then my final, well, I got a couple more things. Favorite series overall, Frey, Joss Whedon Frey, the 90s Guardians specifically, everything from Joss and Lunar Brothers and Mark Miller and Brian Lynch, forgot to mention Brian Lynch earlier, Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, The Runaways, Alone in the Dark, Wizard of Oz Marvel adaptations, some of my favorite graphic novels. I really like Cowboy. That's just a hidden gem. The Sculptor, that is amazing. And the current books that I'm into, the top favorite, I'm not going to name 75 of them. These are the top books just to kind of give everyone a good grasp on what we're like here. My favorite currently, Outcast, Revival, Wayward, and Bonnie, Giant Days, Wild's End, The Current Thor, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, A-Force, Everything Star Wars, Silk, Silver Surfer, Dan Slott, Spider-Man, Vision.
Wow. Well, there we go.
You got some current stuff?
Yeah, I got some current stuff. Like we were talking earlier, I am much more heavier on the DC side of things, so I'm always reading the current Batman. I'm actually just started. I got my stack of comments from this week sitting right next to me, and I actually read the DC Rebirth Flash issue, and I really enjoyed that, so I'm going to start picking that up again. I'm reading everything Harley Quinn. Awesome. Those books are absolutely hitting the mark every single month. She's doing a fantastic job of writing that character. The dialogue is fantastic.
It's Amanda Conner?
Yes. I had to think. I'm like, it's right on the tip of my tongue. She's doing a great job with that. For the Marvel stuff, Vision.
Vision.
That is pound for pound every single month. That might be probably one of the best books for me. I mean, that goes on top of the pile every single time.
Awesome.
So, and then, yeah, I'm reading a lot of different independent stuff from Image, and I've got a couple. I'm all on board with Civil War 2. I'm going to be getting all the crossovers. I actually have Gods of War in my hand right here. And actually, I don't really read any Spider-Man, and look what I have right here. Amazing Spider-Man Civil War 2, number one.
Awesome.
So, this Civil War actually got me to buy, not that I have anything against a character, mm-hmm, it was just one of those characters I was never drawn to. So I never really read much. And here in my hand, right here, is Amazing Spider-Man number one from the Civil War crossover. So
that puts a smile on my
face. So much stuff.
And then just to top it off with some of my favorite characters, Thanos. I love me some Thanos. Currently reading everything Infinity related from his origin up until the recent graphic novel releases. You'll hear more about that as the podcast goes on. Spider-Man, Swamp Thing, Kitty Pryde, Beast, Wonder Woman, Kamala Khan, who's the current Miss Marvel, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who is very much a comic book character now with the ongoing seasons, Supergirl, thanks to Melissa Benoist, hell yes, and my all-time favorite, oh, I should mention 3D Cowboy as well, Ryan Brown, shout out, and my all-time favorite comic book character that's not Stan Lee, but Stan Lee was a co-creator, along with Jack Kirby, I'm assuming, did that. The Silver Surfer is my all-time, and I'm wearing the shirt for it. I brought up a little figure here, and I'll talk about that when I talk about my first Silver Surfer issue in the next release on how Silver Surfer retroactively became my favorite character, comic book character of all freaking time.
You know, a lot of my favorite characters, are from some independent comics. So I'm going to go back to Astro City. The Samaritan, that's Astro City's version of Superman. That probably is one of my all-time favorite. I actually have a really big, it's really heavy, this big plastic figurine thing that I got just a couple months ago. And then, of course, I like Batman, Supergirl. That series alone made me a huge Supergirl fan.
TV series?
Yes. I have, of course, Batman, The Flash. This is going to sound funny. No one's going to, unless you read Saga, nobody is going to know who this is, but probably I actually have this plush animal thing that I ordered. Awesome. And that would
so you
be
did order it.
The Lion Cat from Saga.
I almost bought that, and I've only read Trade 1, and I almost bought that item, so yeah. I can respect that.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that. So
yeah, that is the origin stories. We're going to keep this episode up, and as we do the weekly episodes, everyone can always kind of go back if you kind of want to hear a little more about us as we carry on doing spotlights and just talking everything comics on a positive note. Any final thoughts that you had just to kind of wrap it up?
I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I think we can learn, and I really hope that the listeners are going to be interactive with us, because I would love to hear, you know what? If you have origin stories, we'd love to hear about them. I'd love to read them.
Totally.
I would love to.
So yeah, we have all the plugs in the beginning and the intro and the outro of the show, and we have much more to discuss in the awesome medium that is comic books. So please, read comics for comics' sake.
For comics' sake on iTunes.
At For Comics' Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics' Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, soundcloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com. And a special thank you to our key grip, Brian Kraft. So we're doing an audio test. I'm Anthony.
I'm Ryan. Audio test.
And we're talking about comics because we love comics.
Yes, we do.
It is kind of good to be, oh, and then, you know, just do that. It's good to have some of the volumes there just to kind of see how that plays in. Comics!
I need some water.